Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This season of Strong Opinions Loosely Held is brought to you by Spotify. If you're a fan of our show, check out Good as Hell. It's a new spotlight by Spotify in partnership with Refinery29. On Good as Hell, you can hear host Lizzo as she talks with the leading ladies of rap about breaking down barriers. It's more than just a podcast. It's a safe space for all women in music. Spotlight also gets you way closer to the story with related photos, videos, and animations available with each episode. Good as Hell, a new spotlight only on Spotify. Hey everyone, I'm Elisa Kreisinger and welcome to Strong Opinions Loosely Held from Refinery29. Last year, Me Too hit Twitter timelines and newspaper headlines all over the world. In its best moments, the hashtag created solidarity between women across race, sexual orientations, and nationalities. But one border Me Too had trouble crossing was what's commonly referred to as the Great Firewall of China. When the hashtag came up against the country's tightly controlled digital space, it was quickly wiped out by government censors.
You had the literal translation of Me Too, 我也是, so it literally just means Me Too. That was censored, and a number of other kind of translations of this were censored.
That's digital scholar An Xiaomina.
And so the remix there was to actually just call it Me Too, which is means rice rabbit or rice bunny. It sounds exactly like Me Too, and it is hopping around the internet and is standing in for the Me Too movement.
Chinese memesters started using images and emojis of bunnies besides bowls of rice to talk about feminism and sexual assault. It was an image-based pun that slipped past the country's censors.
I think what's really interesting is seeing how meme culture, political meme culture, spreads across borders and boundaries, and how these techniques and how these conversations can leap across language, leap across ostensibly what's supposed to be a censored internet, and can spark conversation.
An studies the way memes spread across social movements. She became interested in Chinese memes in particular in 2011, when she was working with famous Chinese artist Ai Weiwei on a gallery show in Korea.
And it was that year, it was a very consequential year, for the world, I think. You had the Arab Spring in Egypt, you had the Occupy movement in the United States, and people were becoming more aware of how the internet and social movements were intersecting.
While all of this was happening, there was a major crackdown in China, and a number of activists, including Ai Weiwei, were disappeared.
Mentions of his name were censored, mentions of other activists were censored, and it was very difficult to use Chinese social media and talk about what was happening.
But even though Ai Weiwei's name was being erased from the Chinese internet, An noticed his presence was peeking through in other ways.
What was interesting was shortly after that was a number of memes. So in addition to people saying Ai Weiwei, they said Ai Weilai. It's a play on words with his name that allowed for people to talk about him until the censors caught up with that remix. And then people would use images and memes to also reference him after his disappearance. And so it became pretty clear that memes and meme culture, remix culture, were a very strong way for people to get a message out.
And the internet in China is censored, is that right?
There are a number of strictures on the internet, one of which is the Great Firewall, which prevents access to sites like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And so when you're in China, it's very difficult to access those sites. People do find ways around that. They can use VPNs, they can use other methods. For the most part, they're effectively not available within China. And so the alternative sites are sites like WeChat, Sina Weibo, other social media platforms that have all the semblances and all the uses of social media that folks would be familiar with in the West. But because it's operated internally in China, because the servers are located inside China, there is the ability to censor. And then in addition to that, you have the phenomenon of the 50 Cent Party, which is a rumored internet commentator, paid internet commentators who share messages, frequently nationalist messages, as a way of influencing social discourse.
Hold up, wait, what?
Paid internet commentators who share messages, frequently nationalist messages, as a way of influencing social discourse.
You talked about the censorship, that it's human censorship and also a keyword censorship as well. How does the government censor something like memes when it is usually image-based?
I think that's part of the why you have a lot of human censors is because memes are frequently images or videos, and not just that, but they're frequently ambiguous. When you think about most popular memes that we see around the world, they're frequently used in-jokes and in-joke humor, they reference humor that from the outside is completely opaque, and it's difficult to understand, like, what are these people laughing about? And that is actually really effective for building community and also confusing people who, from the outside, are trying to understand who's sharing political messages. You know, the ability to detect these images and understand the political content behind them has improved thanks to optical character recognitions, image recognition. And then, of course, you still have the range of human sensors who can interpret what's happening, see what's going on. And, you know, keep in mind that often those human sensors can be young. They can be from the same generation, so they can understand the in-jokes, the humor, the references fairly effectively.
What's interesting about the internet in China is that you don't always know what's considered censored content. As memes flourish, so does internet censorship.
What we're seeing now is that there's still a vibrant social and political meme culture. At the same time, the ability for the government to control the internet and to control speech has also gotten stronger. And so the use of memes since 2011 is frequently, well, one, it's not just political. You have a very broad, vibrant meme culture in general in China. And so the political memes we're looking at is just one thin slice of the kind of this broader internet culture. And you have this range of folks who talk about very sensitive issues. Then also people can talk about other social issues like police corruption, local government corruption, that may or may not cross the line. One thing to keep in mind about how censorship and how kind of control of speech occurs in China is that it's frequently set up as a gray zone. People don't necessarily know where the line is, where they can and cannot say. And so so you do still see a pretty vibrant meme culture, a political meme culture. But then at the same time, the systems that are in place now, the use of a social credit system, the use of real name registration, the use of AI systems and into human censorship and detection mechanisms, you know, that all adds up to making it much more difficult to have a vibrant political speech.
I learned from one of your talks that you've got to register to even use the internet with your real name, and almost like you were getting a social security number in the States just to use the internet.
You know, we have similar concerns, I think, for human rights activists with Facebook, with the fact that you have this kind of policy of real name registration. Now, in the West, that registration is limited to one social network, that registration doesn't reflect on your credit score, for instance. Whereas the emerging social credit system it aims to connect your offline activities, your online activities, and your identity all in one, so that anything you say online can have consequences in offline space.
When I first heard about your work, I thought, wait, how do memes flourish in a censored internet environment where you've got to register as yourself? Because that, to me, the anonymity of memes is the beauty and where so much of the remix happens.
That's right. And so just looking generally globally around the world, it's very difficult to control meme culture. You have this effect like the Streisand effect, which is the notion that when you try to suppress content online, people will tend to actually amplify it with great effect. And you see that play out in censored environments. But what's easier to control than meme culture is people's bodies, people's credit systems, people's access to finance. The systems that we're seeing emerge in China, we should pay great attention to. The fact that people can and have been arrested for spreading memes, political memes, suggests that the government and censors in general are catching up to meme culture.
Why does the Chinese government want to control the internet and want to control speech?
One of the primary reasons you do have these censorship mechanisms is because of the internet's ability to help people organize in opposition to structures of power. We've seen that around the world, that as people use the internet in a decentralized way to organize their movements become, in many ways, much more powerful.
You've likened Chinese internet memes to political street art that you grew up with in L.A. How are those two related? Where do you find the commonality?
What you have with street art is people are remixing public space. They're taking control of public space and creating new narratives, new images, new symbols, telling stories, frequently from marginalized communities, from people whose voices you don't typically hear about in mainstream media. And at the same time, there is this anonymity to street art, there's this remixability to street art, and there's this this kind of irreverence frequently in street art that makes it such a vibrant culture. So it's when I saw memes, I started to think a lot about, oh, this is interesting. This is people reclaiming kind of the digital streets of the web. What you see now, both in China and in around the world, is people putting memes into their street art or taking photographs of street art, putting them on the internet and remixing those. And so in many ways, street art and meme culture are very much intersecting, thanks to smartphones, thanks to the internet, thanks to Photoshop and other tools.
You were working with Ai Weiwei in 2011, like you mentioned earlier, when he was taken by the Chinese government. What role did memes play in allowing you and other followers of his work to fight back?
So 2011, some of the memes I observed, a number of them were puns on his name. So yet his name is pronounced Ai Weiwei, right? And so I have Ai Weilai, which means love the future. One of his nicknames on the internet was Ai Huzi, bearded eye. And then that sounds a lot like Ai Huzi, which is a tiger cub eye. You can create these kind of endless remixes based on his name, based on his presence. And he also had an installation in London that was a sunflower seed installation, you know, thousands of sunflower seeds at the Tate Modern. And those sunflower seeds became an iconic symbol. In China, sunflower seeds are a snack, a common snack, sort of like French fries or potato chips. And so by posting memes of sunflower seeds, people were able to talk about him without making it overtly, you know, super obvious that they were talking about him. And so, of course, you know, it was this kind of cat and mouse game. You saw that as people were posting things, censors were catching up to those puns, and then, then people were coming up with new puns, and then censors catching up to those. And so it's not like you had this, you know, completely free expression. Is that people were catching on to them, just as I, as an observer, was able to see what was happening and then kind of understand what was happening. But then you had this other effect because of his international profile, is that those memes then started to spill out. And you saw them pop up in Hong Kong, where you don't have the same kind of censorship restrictions in as you see in mainland. And then you also saw with the international art world referencing a lot of these memes, especially the Love the Future one, especially the sunflower seeds ones. So you had this kind of amplification effect that went from kind of the meme culture in China reaching out into the broader world, into the international community, and then the international arts community. It made these different performance pieces, these videos that were able to raise international awareness.
And so did that help Ai Weiwei's cause?
It's difficult to say exactly how much the attention helped him. After 81 days in detention, he was released. A lot of writers have attributed the growing international pressure to the fact that he was released, that international awareness was, you know, helped along by a lot of the memes.
It's almost a privilege in that sense to be memed, mm-hmm. because it's a way out, and it's a way to draw attention to your cause.
When you look at the United States, and you have the story of Trayvon Martin, who was basically unknown until shortly after he was killed, people made a number of memes about him. They made the hoodie memes. They made Skittles memes because he was shot while holding a bag of Skittles. And those Skittle memes were, you know, lots of creative art. You had drawings of him, and so in some ways, meme culture can often, you know, respond to people who were once invisible or marginalized as well. And meme culture can lift up marginalized stories and bring them to international attention. This comes with pros and cons, I think. The international attention can actually lead to backlashes. It can lead to increased risk for the people made visible. But it can also, with the right care and with the right motivations, we also see that it brings much needed attention to individuals or people or communities whose stories may have been overlooked.
And what was the official charge against Ai Weiwei?
It was related to taxes. But I think what's important to note is that he was disappeared without due process.
For those who don't know who Ai Weiwei is, can you just give us a brief primer on who he was and why he was so important and still is so important in Chinese culture?
So Ai Weiwei is an artist, activist, and filmmaker who was based in Beijing and makes a number of really, really important conceptual pieces and sculptures that engage both with notions of space, of identity, and then culture. He's moved to Berlin. He's had to move to Berlin. And with his current work, he's actually increased his international engagements, and so starting to look at issues like the refugee crisis in Europe.
WeChat and Weibo both have grass mud horse emojis as part of their mm-hmm. official keyboard. Can you talk about why that's important for someone who has no idea what those things are or why they're culturally relevant and why it's cool?
So I think it was around 2009 that internet culture researchers started documenting the emergence of the grass mud horse. And it's a profane pun. And so the grass mud horse in Chinese is pronounced Sao Ni Ma. And so literally grass mud horse. But it sounds a lot like another phrase that when you change the tone, literally means in English, fuck your mother. And so the grass mud horse has long stood as a symbol of resistance to internet censorship. And in its very form, it was expressing how memes are resistant to censorship. I started observing on Sina Weibo and on WeChat that you had the grass mud horse appearing as official images, especially on Weibo, where you had the actual llama-like creature available as an emoji that you could, an emoji-like image that you could select and actually put in your messages. And I was you know, thinking through, like, why would this be happening? Why on WeChat also you have these stickers? When you understand this in the context of how the government is catching up to meme culture and is using, co-opting meme culture, it's pretty clear that that co-optation of this symbol was a way of defanging it. And was a way of diminishing its power. Anything that was, I think Anne Hinokowitz, who editor at LA Review of Books, observed that anything that's punk rock eventually gets co-opted by the mainstream. And I think we saw that. We're starting to see that here with the grass mud horse.
Can you talk about how the silliness of a meme can connect back to political power? Like how the co-optation almost goes both ways?
Yeah, I think silliness and humor in general, in context, humor can be used in so many different ways. It can be used to marginalize people, to attack them, but it can also be used when it's punching up as a way to defang power as well. And so humor has this way of diffusing that, diffusing emotional power. And then at the same time, that silliness, it's also a way of shielding your messages so that only the in-community knows it. Frequently, the reason I think about memes as the street art of the internet is that it's in many ways the people's art, right? The people's media. Anyone can participate in meme culture. Anyone can create memes. They can come from anywhere.
And there's a downside to that, too.
The structures of the internet are very compatible with the goals of authoritarianism. They understand who your social networks are, what you like, where you spend your time, your political affiliations. I think what we need to understand is that the platforms that we build, they come with a technical infrastructure that, with a different politics, can be used with great effect to identify dissent, identify dissenters, and put a lot of people at risk. And so the question that I think in the West that we need to start asking is, given the spread of misinformation, given the spread of digital propaganda, what is the internet we want to create that makes it safer for people while still protecting basic principles around free speech?
I believe you're working on an upcoming book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I'm working on a book called Memes to Movements. So it will be published by Beacon Press in January 2019. And it's looking at the role of internet memes in social protest and power.
Thank you so much, Anne, for walking us through memes to movements in China and elsewhere in the world.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Yeah, this was really great.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Anne. Feel free to at me your strong opinions about this episode or anything that came up for you while listening to it. Tweet me at PopCultPirate or slide into my DMs on Instagram at PopCulturePirate. If you're looking for another awesome feminist podcast to listen to, check out my friends Anne and Amina's podcast called Call Your Girlfriend. And if you want more Strong Opinions Loosely Held video content, perhaps like our monthly original long-form video series, head to Facebook watch page called Strong Opinions Loosely Held. Our episode today was produced by the wonderful Julia Alsop with help from the very buff Jay Brunson. It was edited by the awesome David Zuckerman and myself. And keep listening, because there's another episode after this.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.